all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Thank you, Don Rue, and welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's a Wednesday. It's April 12th, 2023. Coming up this hour, the right way to grow new jobs. While Republicans in Madison are considering bills to further punish the newly unemployed or make it harder to have affordable health care, Democrats are proposing a different direction when it comes to workforce development for the jobs of the 21st century and for growing small businesses all across Wisconsin rather than, say, one mega business that's foreign owned in one corner of the state. We'll talk to Madison State Representative Francesca Hung, who will give us a little legislative update on that. We will also talk near the end of the hour to Todd Alba. He has the Todd Alba Show heard on many of these Civic Media radio stations. And if you are a listener that does not have the Todd Alba Show, if you're in Madison, Waukesha, Oshkosh, Green Bay, you can go to civicmedia.us and you can listen to Todd Alba anytime, either listen live over the interwebs or like every show at Civic Media, we turn each hour into its own episode of a podcast. So you can subscribe to the Todd Alba Show or to Up North News Radio, where our 6 a.m. hour is one podcast, the 7 a.m. hour is another podcast. That way you can listen to the whole thing or you can just listen for the guests that you want to hear. And again, you just have to find the show page. Each show has its own page at civicmedia.us. So we will talk to Todd Alba about that, about what's coming up on his show for today. What else do we have coming up here? The Up North News newsletter just came out. Christina Laurie puts that together, and I wanted to share with you a few things that are in this morning's edition. She talks about some of the Wisconsin cheeses that were featured in Cook's Illustrated magazine. She talks about the dairy dilemma that here in America's Dairyland, the average dairy farm has only turned a profit twice in the past 20 years. You can find out what's going on and what some politicians are trying to do to help. And for those folks who didn't hear it yesterday, hearing me talk about some of the bills that Republicans have introduced in the state capitol, you know, like arming teachers and being in favor of gas-powered engines and making it harder to get electric vehicles and other cleaner-burning motors going. I have a little editorial about that in the newsletter as well. Lots of other small notes about Tammy Baldwin traveling around the state. And the sunburst chairs are back up at the UW Memorial Union Terrace, signaling the start of spring. That and much more in our newsletter comes out early every morning. And to get to it, you just go to upnorthnewswi.com, click on newsletter in the top banner, and there you will be able to subscribe and get that update on a daily basis. You will recall that Democrats at the national level, the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, the fancy way of saying the National Party, they had tried to host their convention in Milwaukee in 2020, and then there was this pandemic, and so a lot of it was done virtually. Well, the DNC is coming back to the Midwest, but they'll be just down the road a spell because Republicans had already decided to come to Milwaukee in 2024. For their national nominating convention. And now Democrats have chosen Chicago. So both parties will be in the same area. Both parties have basically planted their flag and said, we understand that this is where presidential elections are won or lost in the Midwest. Not Illinois so much, but of course, we're talking Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, you know, basically the old, the blue wall of states that Donald Trump surprisingly won in 2016. And Democrats want to hold that wall that they built back up with Joe Biden. And Republicans still think that there are votes out there. They look at Wisconsin, for example, being relatively a 50-50 state and understanding that whether it's Donald Trump or somebody else, they're not going to win the White House in 2024 unless they get back to making inroads in the Midwest. And so that's why you're going to see so much activity around Milwaukee and Chicago next year when these nominating conventions come to town and when the whole national party tries to convince Midwest voters that they are on their side. In sports at 7-11 on this Wednesday, Corbin Burns threw 8 scoreless innings last night. Allegedly, I was asleep long before first pitch, but there was quite the pitching duel for the first 6 innings of the Brewers game against the Diamondbacks, but the Brewers eventually broke through and beat Arizona 7-1. Merrill Kelly, the pitcher for the Diamondbacks, had a no-hitter going into the 7th inning when Willy Adames broke it up by hitting a solo home run to center field, and then the Brewers ended up scoring 5 runs in the 7th thanks to Mike Brasso's 2-out, 2-run double. Rowdy Tellez homered in the 8th. Brasso added another solo home run in the 9th. But again, it was Corbin Burns going 8 innings that really made the difference. Pitcher Brandon Woodruff, however, was placed on the 15-day injured list with right shoulder inflammation. And so right-hander Jansen Junk was called up from AAA and probably will get the start this afternoon. The Brewers and Diamondbacks will finish up their 3-game series in Arizona at 2:40 our time this afternoon. Then they head to San Diego for a series that begins tomorrow night, part of that continuing West Coast road trip. Let's see, the San Diego games are going to be on Friday night, Saturday afternoon, and then Sunday afternoon. And then it's up to Seattle for 3 games, Monday night, Tuesday night, and Wednesday afternoon, before getting next week Thursday off and starting another homestand. When we come back, we'll talk to weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki about a very, very warm day across Wisconsin. It includes red flag warnings. Please don't try any outdoor burning today across much of Wisconsin because of the winds and the high temperatures. And then there's a cool down and rain coming. We'll find out more from Jennifer in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio. We talked about Sonny Bono earlier, so we're just listening to a little Sonny and Cher here. All right, let's turn our attention to the weather here with meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. As I mentioned right before the break, there are red flag warnings out around many parts of Wisconsin because of the high winds, the dry conditions, which is a little odd. It's that kind of a weather picture we have right now, that you have red flag warnings for dry vegetation and high winds and the threat of fires, even while the snowpack up north is still melting and rivers are swelling up quickly. We have this big warm up today and then a cool down over the weekend. So many things for Jennifer to track, but we'll see what she has to say about the weather summary around Wisconsin today. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, and you really nailed it on the head. We're looking at red flag warnings here for much of the state, a little over half the state here today, actually, going into effect later this morning into the early afternoon hours. Wausau down over to Richland Center and then to Milwaukee. Windy also in the west around Emory and Baldwin, but not looking like that warning there today, or in the north as well. However, it is still expected to be overly dry for everyone. So regardless, just be careful with any fires today, even for the next couple of days as windy conditions still actually continue. We saw that warm front push through the area, and now we have a high pressure system in control, bringing in those southerly winds and heat from the Gulf, however, keeping that moisture at bay until mostly Friday night or Saturday for nearly everyone. Sunny skies today and highs getting up to the low to mid 80s for everyone. A little bit cooler, still above average in the northern portions of the state if you are traveling and want to know what the weather is like up there. The west, central, and southern portions of the state should be around about the mid 50s for highs. So very mild here for this time of the year, above average temperatures. Essentially the same expected for everyone tomorrow with that high in control, not much of a difference at all. Friday is starting to cool down a little bit as a cold front begins to push through, cooling into the 70s for most, 60s close over to the Michigan lakefront. A little bit cooler here on Saturday as that system really starts to push through, or either at or still above average, with chances for rain for most. And then cooler on into the 40s on Sunday across the board, below average, with a chance for rain. The central parts of the state, Wisconsin Rapids to Wausau over to the west, looking at a chance for a rain-snow mixture in the morning, a little bit of slush, and then becoming all rain by the afternoon hours. So as you mentioned, we are looking at some cooler weather coming in for the weekend.
Oh yeah. I mean, 40s for highs, upper 20s for lows. Did I see that right? We're not done seeing 20s yet.
Not quite yet. No, it's, I mean, this is springtime in Wisconsin for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So don't go planting anything tender at this point yet. Jennifer, thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, Jennifer. So let's turn back to the Joint Finance Committee from the legislature, which was meeting at UW-Eau Claire yesterday. They'll be in Wisconsin Dells today. I had a chance to go down there, talk to folks, give a listen to some of the pitches that people were making. Hundreds of people drove for hours, waited for hours for just a couple of minutes in front of the Joint Finance Committee, which is writing the budget for the next 2 years. Writing that budget, I add yet again, with a record $7 billion surplus that they can choose to put to good use if they want. And again, not about spending the whole thing. This isn't, just some kind of found money in the couch cushions. There are ways to make investments with this. There are ways to pay cash for some things instead of taking on more debt. But one of the things that could really be helped out is the way that we fund not just education in the state, but special education in the state. These are mandated programs, and rightly so, that kids with special needs still deserve an education, but it takes a little bit more work, more staffing, more resources. And yet the state over the years has reimbursed local school districts less and less for that, but not for every school, just for the public schools. So we talked to Heather Dubois-Boranan from the Wisconsin Public Education Network, talked to her just outside Davies Center at UW-Eau Claire, and asked her more about, you know, that one pitch that she and she'd like others to make to your legislator, whether they're on joint finance or not, is to talk about this particular need for education.
But across the state, the thing that we're hearing that schools and districts need most is more attention to the state's failure to fund special education. We have not funded that category in decades in a meaningful way, and we are neglecting the state's most vulnerable students. Districts are spending $1.5 billion out of general aid just to cover mandated special ed costs that aren't reimbursed by the state every year. And we fully support the governor's proposal to bump that reimbursement up to at least 60%, but why not restore it to 90% so that we can end funding discrimination between students in public schools and students in private schools who already receive a 90% reimbursement? If you've got one thing to ask for, tell the state to improve its special education funding and make sure the needs of all kids are being met. When special ed kids have their needs met, all students thrive.
Let me repeat a couple of things in there just to really hammer the point home. Right now, the state once upon a time reimbursed school districts up to 90% of the cost for special education. That has come down to something like 20-30% at times in school districts, but they still have to pay for all that special education. And so where does that money come from? It comes from general school aids, which would be used throughout the rest of the school district, throughout the rest of the school for the rest of the programs, but instead has to go to this because the state is not putting in its fair share anymore. It's not putting in what used to be 90% reimbursement. Governor Evers says, let's at least bring that back up to 60%. That at least would be a big improvement. I think everybody can agree on that. But Heather's point is, why not bring it back to 90%, especially since, and here's the kicker, voucher schools get reimbursed at 90%. Republicans in the legislature have set it up that voucher schools get a much higher reimbursement for taking on kids with special needs compared to our public schools, which again simply reinforces what we've already known, that Republican legislators have created and are now funding two parallel systems of education in Wisconsin. We can't afford that. If somebody wants to go to private school, go to private school, pay for it. Like so many other things out there, there are plenty of private sector things we all pay for that we don't get taken care of by the state. But for the folks who are opposed to public education, for whatever reason, they have set up this parallel school system, and far too much of our tax money is going there instead of to our local neighborhood schools. I also talked to State Representative Jill Billings, and we were standing outside Davies Center at UW-Eau Claire, a beautiful new building, replaced a very old building there on campus. We could also see Centennial Hall, one of the buildings that I'd pushed for as a legislator. And we could also see next door the Phillips Science Building, which has been antiquated for a quarter century or more. And yet that project continues to hobble along to get final legislative support to build a new science building. Well, there were people from UW-La Crosse who are making a pitch for their building projects, UW-Superior, because again, like anything else, if you have a campus that has old facilities and isn't attractive, people are going to end up going out of state for college. So it is worth the investment. And so I asked Representative Billings about the projects that are needed in La Crosse and elsewhere, and trying to get that with a sense of bipartisanship. And she hopes that last week's state Supreme Court numbers help her Republican colleagues see the need to tack more to the center.
Well, I've always worked really hard to reach across the aisle. Western Wisconsin folks kind of have that reputation that we try to work together and get something done for the people that we represent. But I think the latest Supreme Court justice race shows that, number one, students are coming out. They're voting, they're making their voices heard in a really impactful way. And legislators have to pay attention to that. And I think they're skewing things more toward fair maps, fair elections, personal rights over their own bodily autonomy with when it comes to abortion issues. And we should be paying attention to that.
So again, Joint Finance was at UW-Eau Claire yesterday, will be in Wisconsin Dells today. The Washington Post has provided some numbers that a lot of us have been waiting for since last week's state Supreme Court election, and that is how people voted on college campuses around the state. The article was written by Dan Balls and Dylan Wells at the Washington Post and looked at all of the many ways that students were motivated to turn out, either self-motivated or other groups that were urging them to turn out. The numbers are amazing. There's a graphic in the middle of the story that looks at each campus, and then what share of that campus vote went to Tony Evers in just this past November, and what share of the vote went to Janet Protasiewicz last week. And for example, at UW-La Crosse in the Student Union Ward 9, Tony Evers got 56%. Of the vote at UW-La Crosse in that one student ward, 56%. Janet Protasiewicz got 75% of the vote there. At UW-Eau Claire, the voting ward at Davie Center, Tony Evers got 77% of the student vote back in November, 88% of the vote for Janet Protasiewicz this past week. And then the Madison numbers are off the charts. There are four different voting wards there. The one at the Memorial Union in November, Tony Evers got 90% of the student vote. And last week, Janet Protasiewicz got 95% of the student vote there. And again, this is something that you should expect for the foreseeable future, in large part because of the Dobbs decision, but then that was simply the straw that broke the camel's back. This is a generation, Gen Z, that has watched Republicans do less than nothing on the school shootings that have led them to, you know, go to school with a sense of fear, terror, or dread for their entire lives. They were doing active shooter drills as frightened little five-year-olds. They can vote now, and they know who has not been looking out for them when it comes to some things as common sense as red flag laws and universal background checks and the like. So now you start to add in attacks on whether they can control their own bodies. You have basically just a generation that is so much more involved politically than Gen X ever was. Gen X, you know, my group, about as apathetic as it comes, and Gen Z is nothing like that. And so those are figures that are very telling. And as Jill Billings told us, based on those issues, expect to see more of that in the coming election. It'll also depend on what these Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee do with the budget. Again, hundreds of people spoke to them. And it wasn't just the education issues that I talked about. There were all kinds of economic development issues. There were infrastructure needs that came up. And yet, if this next budget, especially after a record surplus, still can't get things done for these voters, if they still see a group that is hostile to them, not just personally, but economically, well, they can hold that Republican convention in Milwaukee and talk about the Midwest all they want, but they're not going to be able to hold on to the votes at all. And they should look for more numbers like what you saw last week. State Representative Francesca Hong coming up next. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
We've got our friend, State Representative Francesca Hong, joining us now, and we're going to cover some familiar ground for those folks who listen to the show, but the better you hear it from a voice of authority rather than somebody yapping on the radio here. So Representative Hong, thanks so much for being with us and for talking about workforce development, small business development, and other issues. Thanks again.
Of course. Good morning, Pat. Happy to be here.
Oh, I got to tell you, we were speaking during the break here and folks already heard me yesterday and again today, just bringing up the ideal that and we will get to workforce development, but I have to start with this one. This bill that came up of, while more than half a dozen other states are moving toward cleaner technology, cleaner energy, the jobs that result from it, and not being so reliant on fossil fuel powered vehicles and lawn and garden equipment and so forth, Wisconsin Republicans, rather than, well, they're just going the opposite way and saying, no, we want everything to run on gas and oil forever. You know, basically, in this bill that came up yesterday in State Affairs, a committee that you serve on, I'm probably being a little unfair to them, but maybe you can speak better than I can as to, you know, why Republicans are speaking out about things that keep us from getting cleaner, greener, better technology, better jobs. I just find it puzzling.
It's another bill that seeks to look for a problem where it doesn't exist instead of addressing the broader issue and the existential crisis of our time, which is climate change. And switching over to cleaner energy, you're absolutely right, is going to provide family supporting wages, good manufacturing jobs, and really look at making sure that we're all focused on the care and sustainability of our state and our planet. And we can do it together, and we can do it in, you know, transitionally, where each community can kind of work at their own pace. But unfortunately, yesterday's energy source bill was more fear-mongering, that the government is out to take away your gas stove and gas-powered, you know, snowblowers or snowmobiles, and that's not the case at all. There is no indication that the administration or Democrats are going to do this, and so again, it's really unfortunate that instead of addressing problems, Republicans continue to fear-monger and take away local control in their communities by mandating that we have to have a ban on potentially banning energy sources or that aren't electric.
The common theme here is confiscation. It seems like that is a familiar talking point. They're coming, first it was they're coming for your guns. Now they're coming for your gas cars. They're coming for your gas stoves. And it would be parity. Well, it is. It is parity, but that seems to be the theme, is whatever it is they don't like, they just accuse people of wanting to confiscate what they have now.
And Wisconsinites are tired of this. I think that's the thing, is they're so out of touch with their communities, and what this bill would do would take away local control to be able to move towards cleaner energy and move away from fossil fuels. And again, make sure that communities are getting stronger with good manufacturing jobs that are with family supporting wages and are good union jobs. And I think that if anyone is taking anything away, it's the Republicans are taking opportunities and possibilities away from their constituents and communities. And they can do that because they don't actually represent them, right? They've rigged the maps and made it so that they don't have to listen to the needs of their constituents. And it's really pathetic.
And yet there are so many better ideas that are out there. Governor Evers has shown us that, for example, with the Main Street Bounce Back grants that have helped. It's coming up on 10,000 small businesses, I believe. And then there's ways that you help workers as well as other small businesses. And then there's ways that you don't. And again, we will, I promise, get to the ideas to do it. But again, because these bills keep coming up, there's a new bill that would require folks on certain Medicaid plans to now be reviewed like every 6 months, or as I put it earlier, you know, hey, you poors, prove to us that you're still poor. You know, this kind of punching down mentality that in my mind, and I think to yours as well, does nothing to build up the workforce or the economy.
We have serious problems in multiple sectors. We've heard from police and fire to folks in manufacturing, to our small business owners on our main streets, both brick and mortars and folks who are in entrepreneurship, that recruiting and retaining good people to work in their sectors is difficult right now. And there are so many factors contributing to that, and the Republicans refuse to address them. The fact that we haven't been an attractive state to be able to attract workers or businesses, we've got a net zero migration to our state, the fact that we refuse to expand Badger Care and make healthcare accessible to both workers and employers, and we're sitting on an island, we're one of 10 states that haven't expanded healthcare. So I think it's really unfortunate that instead of trying to figure out solutions, which is what Wisconsinites want, Republicans continue to distract and diffuse and really stray away from the issues and try to create other ones.
So let's get to the positive side of that equation then, the things that, and since a lot of these things are already in the budget proposal from Governor Tony Evers, but what is primarily the message from legislative Democrats about the right ways to build a better economy for the future?
We need to focus on care. Let's talk about childcare and the fact that if we don't invest in childcare counts, which is in the governor's budget, $300 million, which is really the bare minimum for what we need to make sure that our childcare workers are being compensated properly, that administrative costs are being met, and that our facilities and the people who care for our youngest are also being cared for. The fact that we aren't talking about childcare in every single conversation about workforce development, frankly, is I think, an abomination. We also have in the governor's budget proposals to expand paid leave. We've seen from the pandemic what happens, and so many Wisconsinites are having to care for loved ones at homes or struggling to find care workers, and our nursing homes and care facilities are struggling to retain workers as well. We have to be making investments in this care infrastructure, and the governor's budget does that. This is all going to help us maintain and really grow our workforce and make sure that we have a state that is sustainable, attractive, and really has opportunities for everyone in the future.
It's something that we've heard from our friends at Main Street Alliance as well, is that we have to get past this confrontational notion that you only do what's good for the big employers whose workers oftentimes are looked at more as minions, as liabilities rather than assets. You have so many small businesses that want a level playing field, because they want their employees to do well in order to retain them and to recruit new ones. And so rather than an adversarial relationship, you can propose economic development where workers and small businesses act in tandem as advocates for each other.
Exactly. As a small business owner, we struggled with maintaining healthcare costs for our workers and ourselves. And I think that with Badger Care expansion, we saw many folks in the industry that I'm in, the service industry, restaurants and hospitality. We had many workers go on to Badger Care because they became eligible, and now some of them may not be able to remain enrolled. And I think that a lot of the larger manufacturing or larger businesses that may be able to offer more benefits are seeing those costs rise as well. Rising costs are impacting both the workers and the businesses. And instead of being able to figure out ways to find supports for both workers and businesses by helping to cover healthcare, by helping to cover childcare, so that more people can be respected and feel dignity at work, again, Republicans continue to distract and say they don't even want to discuss this.
Another idea that is being bandied about by Republicans deals with unemployment benefits. And again, making it tougher, the window is smaller. It seems to go against one big workforce need in the state, that folks who are newly unemployed early on in the pandemic, for example, by having some pandemic relief. It gave them some financial breathing room, and that enabled them to either look for better work or to upgrade their skills to fill those high skill jobs that are so tough to find. Fran, I don't understand why you wouldn't give the newly unemployed that kind of breathing space to upgrade their skills if you really care about workforce development rather than be more punitive.
Look, the math ain't mathing here, right? We've got high workforce participation rates, low unemployment rate. There are jobs available and we have folks who want to train. But the thing is, if you've got, if you're struggling with your housing, if you're struggling with basic needs and you have to do all of this reporting back to with your insurance, your unemployment insurance, which again, like you said, is to help folks transition into the workforce by adding more burdens to both the agency and the folks who are trying to enter the workforce is not a solution, but going to cause more problems. And so again, I think this is an example of Republicans continuing to distract and having misplaced priorities and not actually addressing the problems that many of the folks in Wisconsin are asking to be solved.
I think one topic we haven't hit yet is affordable housing as well. And that is not something that is just a big city issue. There are places all over Wisconsin that are having trouble, again, recruiting or retaining workers because of the nature of housing stock or infrastructure, folks more interested in building McMansions than, you know, affordable housing units. What are the kinds of things that either the governor's proposing or that you and your colleagues are talking about that can address all these different types of affordable housing issues?
Yeah, so we know we have a housing crisis here in Wisconsin, and whenever there is a crisis, we have to address it in a multifaceted and comprehensive way. So both on the production side and making sure that folks who are unhoused are able to find housing, it has to be working at all levels. And I think that making sure that permitting and zoning is friendlier to developers while making sure that those developers are held accountable to ensure that housing that is available remains permanently affordable, and that we're also looking at more innovative solutions like community land trust and public housing, and making sure that we're not leaving any option off the table. And I think there is a lot of room for bipartisan support to develop more workforce housing and permanent affordable housing across the state. But again, we can have those issues addressed through the budget process, but the Republicans continue to want to delay and make it a legislative process, which we know is going to take longer, and housing, childcare, making sure that we are moving towards cleaner energy. These things are urgent and can't wait, and it's really unfortunate that Republicans continue to disappoint and distract.
We talked in our last segment about some of the numbers that are in now from last week's election on campuses across Wisconsin, which is the first indication we can get of the young adult vote. Well, we certainly need more from those who aren't on college campuses, but just looking at those numbers alone, the young adult vote is off the charts. Do you think, do you think it's going to stay that way for the foreseeable future, that this is a generation engaged far more so than before because of the way our current leaders haven't addressed important issues? Oh, it looks like we lost my connection, Aaron, unless you can hear me. Oh, no. Well, we're going to wait for my connection to come back. Here we go. Or it might be Fran. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Apologies.
Okay. No, that's okay. I worried that it might be. No, I worried that it might be me. So let's try to reestablish that connection. We've got about a minute left here. Tell us again about young adults and their civic engagement for the foreseeable future.
Oh my gosh, the youth showed up. The energy on campus. I was on campus for Get Out the Vote efforts all day on election day. And I tell you, the innovation, the energy, the fact that they know that they don't have to be they don't have to apologize anymore, right? They are showing up unapologetically to make sure that the issues of our time in terms of gun violence and public safety and making sure that they have a sustainable future, they're going to show up and lead. And it's so important that if we want to continue to win in Wisconsin, that we engage, uplift, and respect the youth voices in our state.
Look, I will never forget the essay that you wrote for Up North News 3 years ago when the pandemic was going on and the legislature was clocking out early. And you said, wait a minute, we can work on this, 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 and this, which was kind of the thrust of our conversation today. So I really hope to have you back as we get near the end of this to find out what all got in the budget bill or passed otherwise. And what all got left on the table? You called it out before, and I look forward to you calling it out again because there's so much to work on. Representative Francesca Hong from Madison, thank you so much for the visit today.
Absolutely. Have a great rest of your day, Pat.
Yeah, you as well. All right, we will take this break, and then Todd Alba of the Todd Alba Show will come on and tell us what he's been working on, who he's been talking to, and how you can listen in case it's not on one of your civic media radio stations. Subscribe to us as a podcast or listen online. There's apps. I mean, there's so many options, but no excuses. So give it a listen to Todd and hear about his show coming up next on Up North News Radio for this Wednesday.
Good morning, beautiful. How was your night?
What? Karen?
I don't know. I thought it would be funny.
It is kind of funny.
You know, it's one of those where Kristen Lively will go, oh, I played that, and she'll say something funny, but not really expecting that from Todd Alba.
Yeah.
But rather our subversive shared producer here, Aaron, with his Weezer t-shirt. You know?
Yep.
Always nice. Making trouble. How are you, Todd?
I am well, Pat. We are doing this show out of a warehouse, essentially. we've lost
Aaron
our lease.
About that.
Everything must
about
go.
That, the move to the new facility just off Capitol Square at the top of State Street is going well for everybody but the people currently at the soon-to-be old studio.
Yeah, but it's fine. We're on the air. That's all that matters. But yeah, most of the furniture has been moved to the new headquarters downtown. So it's a couple of cardboard boxes and a chair. and a microphone, but that's fine.
Hey, well, you know what? That's all you need. Look, when I was a kid, all we needed was a Panasonic cassette player, you know, and we could take that little.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Was it Buddy Holly when they recorded "Fade Away"? They did the drums on a card, literally on a cardboard box or something like that.
Sure.
I think so.
Look, we can all make do. With what we got. So. You know, I'm sure that if our bosses were there right now, they'd say, suck it up, Buttercup. And,
exactly.
You know, you're going to be in that fancy new studio before you know it.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'm just we're thankful that we're moving forward. But, yeah, we're expanding all over the state, of course, as you know, in Chippewa Falls and Eau Claire and La Crosse and Hayward. So we're going to be all over the Northwoods and Western Wisconsin. So that'll be fun. And the news this morning, Pat, a few minutes ago, not sure if you saw, Tammy Baldwin announced that she's running for re-election.
Oh, well, that's great. See, so much news, you know, happens while we're just over here visiting. And I'm always glad that, you know, we have people that are actually looking at the wire while I'm yapping over here and able to fill us in. So she has made it official.
Yeah, I had to drop off my my truck at the garage because my check engine light came on last week. And so that's never a good sign. So I'm hoping it's covered by warranty, but we'll see. So I was riding over the kind guy who gave me a ride in the shuttle. And I looked at my phone and there it is. Tammy Baldwin announced that she is running for re-election. So the chase. Or the race has begun. I don't know, Pat. What do you think? What's on your? Who do you think they're going to put as a sacrificial lamb against Tammy Baldwin on the other side?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, it's on your campaign account. It's official. I'm running for re-election. Wisconsin's working families deserve a senator who's going to fight for them, not shady special interests or big corporations. We've made a lot of progress, but the stakes have never been higher, and our work isn't over yet. And so, to get to your question, you know, the name that comes up most often is Mike Gallagher, congressman from Green Bay. I would not put money on that simply because he understands math. You know, there's a lot of things I disagree with him on, but he's not dumb.
Yep.
And he knows how formidable Tammy is and that, you know, there are, he's young enough. You can bide your time, either wait and see if, the Ron Johnson seat comes up again, or, you know, if Tony Evers doesn't run for a third term, that would be available. So I don't see him there. The name Eric Hovde always comes up, but again, It's one of those, you know, stop teasing, you know, either do it or don't.
He's become the Pat Paulson of the Republican Party.
Pat Paulson of, wow. First we were playing clips from Sonny and Cher, and now you're right. Pat Paulson.
We have
a demographic for this show, and we're all drinking Metamucil. He may or may not get in, but as far as, look, there will be a challenger, of course. There was Leah Vukmir. There will always be somebody from the far right that wants to come in. And my sense is that a far right candidate will try to borrow from the Ron Johnson playbook and try to paint Tammy Baldwin as soft on crime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not going to work the same with Tammy Baldwin as it is when billionaires can buy ads against, you know, the scary black man.
Right.
You know, let's call that what it is. That's what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get overconfident, but if you're going to put money on it, you know, you're saying Tammy is has got the odds in her favor.
One of the things I know we've talked about it briefly on and off the air. I mean, one of the things I admire about Senator Tammy Baldwin is her ability to listen to her constituents, which is the entire state. And certainly health care and marriage equality rights are important things that she's worked on. But so too are tourism issues, transportation issues, agricultural issues. She's brought literally millions of dollars into the state for the dairy industry, transportation for the Wisconsin Dells area up there. She's someone who really does listen and is a problem solver for the state. And I think that's why she does so well. And that's why she's such a formidable candidate.
Apparently, there's a statement from the National Republican Senatorial Committee that calls Tammy Baldwin, quote, a reliable vote for the far left, not a senator Wisconsin can count on, which I think was just countered by everything you just said, that she works hard, she listens. I was her first, you know, fair disclosure, I worked for her for about the first 6 months of her term.
Oh, did you really?
Or so,
I didn't know
as
that.
As her district representative for Northern Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, that was an area that I'd campaigned for Congress in, areas mm-hmm. that I'd represented in the legislature. So it was very easy to, you know, be her advance person or be her eyes and ears on the ground up there. And I'm not going to say skeptical, but I'm like, how is she going to be received? And so I saw her first 6 months as a U.S. senator. And that woman works her tail off, and she listens to anybody, and mm-hmm. she wants to learn. She says, look, I'm from Madison, Wisconsin. She'd say to these folks in the, you know, at a paper mill, tell me how your mill works. Tell me how you make money. Tell mm-hmm. me, you know, and she'd do that with every business to understand it and then fight for it. And that's what you want in a senator, not an ideologue.
Yeah, I agree, Pat. I think you started to hit on it earlier when this whole painting a certain picture. My guess is because they don't have much to throw against her, they'll try to attach her to the quote unquote the squad and make her, you know, seem like a crazy left wing, you know, woman. Which those are
Republican. Oh yeah, you'll see as much Rashid Tlaib and Ilhan Omar as you will Tammy Baldwin
exactly
in these commercials. Yeah, that's a great point.
And I think that, you know, people just have to help inoculate against that and say, look, this is what's coming, but don't listen to it. Listen to, you know, go into your community, talk to a dairy farmer, go to the Wisconsin Dells, talk to business people in Wisconsin Dells and ask them what they think of Tammy Baldwin, because it's certainly not a vision of the left-wing squad. It's someone, as you said, Pat, who listens to people and who truly cares. And also, she's just absolutely likable. You know, yeah. I mean, that's the other thing that is sometimes underestimated, that you look at a guy like Dan Kelly, completely unlikable, right? Mm-hmm. And so Tim Michaels, completely unlikable. And so Republicans, you know, they have a likability problem.
Well, again, they want that. They want to be combative. And as we talked about with Representative Francesca Hung, you know, they always are coming at the confiscation. They're coming to mm-hmm. take your guns. They're right. coming to take your gas stoves. Stop it. Stop it. But that's what they do. What's coming up on your show?
You, first of all,
welcome.
Thank you very much. Now let's get
to the good stuff.
No, you are the good stuff. So we'll talk to Pat a little bit in the first part of the hour. Also, Trigvi Olson joins us, I believe, as per usual, if everything is set up right. We'll talk a little bit about this and what lies ahead for Wisconsin in 2024, including the fulcrum point that is Wisconsin and the National Convention for Democrats coming close to Wisconsin to Chicago.
There you go. All right. You can catch Todd Alba. And if it's not on your local radio station, go to civicmedia.us/shows and subscribe to Todd via a podcast. He's next in Richland Center, Wausau, Amory, elsewhere along the Civic Media Radio Network. Talk to you soon, sir.
Thank you, Pat.
All right, Stephanie Miller is next in Madison, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. Y'all have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.